Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for December 16th, 2014. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'm talking with Benjamin Tu about metabolic rewiring that enables cells to survive nutrient limitations. When cells are deprived of nutrients, they can use autophagy to generate the chemical building blocks that they need for basic metabolism and survival. Autophagy is a set of processes through which cells can break down non-essential or damaged proteins and organelles to recycle their chemical components. The target of rapamycin complex 1, or TORC1, regulates cellular metabolism in response to nutrient availability. When plenty of nutrients are available, signaling through TORC1 promotes protein synthesis and cell growth. But when nutrients are limiting, TORC1 signaling is inhibited, and this promotes autophagy. In yeast, a complex that contains the protein NPR2 promotes autophagy by inhibiting TORC1 signaling when nutrients are limiting. Knocking out NPR2 prevents yeast from initiating autophagy under nutrient-limiting conditions. And so you might think that knocking out NPR2 would cause the cells to die when they're nutritionally stressed, but it doesn't. Yeast cells lacking NPR2 actually proliferate faster than normal yeast cells grown under nutrient-limiting conditions. Researchers from Ben Tu's group looked at the changes in cellular metabolism that allow NPR2-deficient cells to grow in nutrient-limited conditions. Tu spoke to me from the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. Welcome, Dr. Tu. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
Thank you.
How do cells cope with nutrient limitations?
Cells, when they encounter various forms of nutrient limitation or nutrient stress, they will turn off processes important for growth and instead turn on ones that are important for survival. So this means, for example, that they will turn off various pathways that they use for making or biosynthesizing various molecules, and instead focus on degrading and recycling and preserving various components. Cells will also, under various forms of nutrient stress, they will turn to a variety of fuel reserves, such as, for example, glycogen or fatty acids. They can break down fatty acids for energy. And they may also now focus on accumulating various molecules or proteins that have protective or survival-associated functions.
Signaling through TORC1, the target of rapamycin complex 1, promotes cell growth by promoting protein synthesis. But when TORC1 signaling is inhibited, when nutrients are limiting, this leads to autophagy. NPR2 is part of a protein complex that can inhibit TORC1 signaling to induce autophagy. How does NPR2 inhibit TORC1?
Yeah, so NPR2, as you mentioned, is a component of this conserved protein complex. And the way NPR2 works is it basically inactivates the small GTPase proteins that are required for TORC to be active. And so some nice work by other groups, including a study published in Science Signaling last year, showed that NPR2, this complex specifically, inactivates the small GTPases that are important for TORC1. So essentially, when something is not right, NPR2 and its associated complex, it sort of puts the brakes on TORC. And we think that when this something that's not right is nutrient limitation, in particular, insufficiency of amino acids, for example.
Inhibiting TORC1 signaling induces autophagy, and NPR2 inhibits TORC1 signaling. So the simple prediction from knocking out NPR2 would be that the cell shouldn't be able to survive, or at least shouldn't be able to thrive under nutrient-limiting conditions because they don't induce autophagy. But that's not what happens when NPR2 is knocked out. Can you explain what happens?
Yeah, so we observed under nutrient limitation that we use in the study that, for example, if you knock out a gene that's involved in the core autophagy process. So a lot of these genes are called ATG genes. Indeed, cells have a very hard time growing if they can't induce autophagy. When we knocked out NPR2, we sort of got a surprise because not only did the cells not induce autophagy, but they actually continue to grow when they are not supposed to. And so as you mentioned, this is sort of a conundrum. And so how do we explain this intriguing phenotype? And so the way we look at it is that, you know, TORC actually has many functions besides regulating autophagy. So if NPR2 is inactive, not only is autophagy blocked, but TORC and everything else it does, those functions are still very on. So as you mentioned, TORC plays an important role in regulating protein synthesis as well as metabolism. So if NPR2 is knocked out, all these other outputs and functions of TORC are still on. And so the net result is that cells that don't have NPR2, they really continue to grow when they should not. But we can take advantage of this and examine, well, what is TORC really doing to cells under these conditions? And so to address this, we monitored the abundances of a lot of metabolites in the cell, and we can see, you know, what increases or what decreases in these mutants that lack NPR2. And so these will provide insights as to what TORC is really doing to metabolism. And some of the things we observed was, for example, that cells lacking NPR2, they really start to synthesize and utilize glutamine as a nitrogen donor for the synthesis of a lot of metabolites that are needed for cells to grow. So not only is glutamine one of the 20 amino acids, but it actually serves as a nitrogen donor so that the cell can make a variety of nitrogen-containing metabolites that are important for growth. For example, some of these include nucleotides that you need to make RNA and DNA. The bases within these nucleotides are nitrogenous, and the nitrogen comes from glutamine. And so we can really see that TORC, what it's really doing is sort of turning on the crank to let cells synthesize and utilize glutamine for making these metabolites that contain nitrogen.
What are your nutrient deprivation conditions? What is the culture medium lacking?
We have introduced a non-fermentable carbon source called lactate. And in order for yeast cells to grow on lactate, they really have to use their mitochondria. It turns out that many studies of yeast tend to use very high concentrations of glucose. And we know that yeast cells love glucose. And so whenever they see high concentrations of glucose, they tend to repress a lot of proteins and pathways that they don't need because they think they just want to keep growing. So the yeast cells, essentially, they shut off a variety of regulatory strategies that they need only under more difficult nutrient environments. For example, using non-fermentable carbon sources such as lactate.
So the NPR2 deficient cells are making more glutamine when they're in this medium that has lactate instead of glucose. What is it about using lactate as a carbon source that enables this upregulation of glutamine synthesis?
So when the cells are growing in lactate, they increase mitochondrial biogenesis. And so they have very active mitochondria in order to metabolize this lactate for energy. It so happens that in order for cells to make glutamine, they are also dependent on the mitochondria and several mitochondrial enzymes. So essentially, these cells are poised and ready to make more glutamine as soon as the cells see loss of NPR2 and hyperactive TORC activity.
So essentially, these NPR2 deficient cells are rewiring their metabolism to survive on this different carbon source. Do these findings give us any insight into how metabolism is altered in normal cells when they're deprived of nutrients?
Yes. So we found that normal cells, when we subject them to this nutrient limitation, they actually accumulate substantial amounts of glutamine, whereas if you look at how much glutamine is within these cells, NPR2 knockout cells have much less glutamine, but that's because they're utilizing it like crazy. But the wild-type cells seem to now focus on accumulating glutamine, almost suggesting that glutamine has some sort of cytoprotective or survival function. So the cells seem to stop nitrogen utilization and focus on trying to preserve and accumulate a source of glutamine. And we think this is for when the nutrient environment becomes favorable, then this glutamine can then be used for biosynthesis again.
Yeast is a great model system for dissecting metabolic pathways and for seeing how cells respond to different nutrient conditions. How might this sort of work in yeast apply to situations in multicellular animals, say in cancer, where we know that there's a lot of metabolic changes and metabolic rewiring that's required for the cells to be able to grow?
I think the yeast system actually could be quite useful to help us try to understand what's going on in more complicated mammalian systems. For example, there's a lot of interest in the TORC pathway because it's often hyperactivated in a variety of cancers. And so by understanding sort of what does TORC do and the consequences of having hyperactive TORC, depending on whether cells are in an oxidative environment or a glycolytic environment, we can perhaps begin to predict, for example, what might go wrong when TORC activity is hyperactive or the consequences on cellular metabolism in tissues that are highly glycolytic, such as, for example, tumors or other tissues that might have more oxidative metabolism, tissues that might be more reliant on their mitochondria for energy production.
Ben, thanks for speaking with me.
Oh, sure. My pleasure.
That was Benjamin Tu discussing a paper published in the December 16th issue of Science Signaling by Laxman and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.